Welcome to another episode of Sales Transformation brought to you by Leadium. Today, we have Jeff Torbeck on to discuss the future of marketplaces and the importance of brand building in sales. Colin, back to you.
All right, welcome to another episode of Sales Transformation brought to you by Leadium. I'm your host, Colin Mitchell, and today we've got Jeff Torbeck on. He is the VP of Revenue over at Gun.io. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thanks, Colin. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, looking forward to this conversation. We were chatting a little bit before, so I know that there's going to be lots of nuggets here for our listeners, but give us a little bit of background on yourself.
Yeah, so I've basically been in the marketplace business for the last 10 years. I started at LinkedIn, then went over to Hired, which does marketplaces for software engineers, then ended up at Betts building their platform for go-to-market. Had a quick stint at Clipboard Health doing their marketplace stuff for nurses. And now I'm at Gun.io, which is a marketplace for software engineers to be able to find, you know, full-time or freelance work. So as we kind of discussed a little bit before, I love the marketplace space. I think it's the future. So I just can't get out of the space.
You clearly love marketplaces.
I do. I think it's the future. And, it's a fun and challenging space to be in. But I think there's a lot of upside if we can, you know, get it right.
What is it that you love so much about marketplaces?
I think the way of connecting both sides to be able to figure out what they want, right? I always think of it as like the match.com or something like that for like people finding a job. Companies don't want to be overrun with resumes today, and candidates don't want to just like be slinging resumes out to hope that they can find a job. From a marketplace side, the marketplace model can give candidates the ability to really look for the opportunity that they're looking for, not necessarily just the company. Because I think when a lot of candidates are like, hey, I'm looking for a job, who can help me? And people raise their hand and go, oh, cool. Like, what are your top five companies? I'll try to make an introduction. Most of the time, they don't have those nailed down. They have some like cool companies they think they would want to work for, but it's more of like, what projects do you want to work on? What do you want to build? Like, if you're in sales, what size deal do you want to sell? What kind of industry do you want to be in? Like, that's the kind of stuff you can find on a marketplace. And most of the time get introduced to companies that were never on your radar, and vice versa for the company side. Companies can really have the ability to find the right people without just sorting through resumes and hoping that like the right person's going to apply to their gig.
Yeah. And what do you think are some of the, I mean, you know, the landscape has changed a lot, right? A lot of companies, you know, sort of took this revenue at all cost approach, and they can't anymore, but that's all they know. So, you know, just kind of curious to see what your thoughts of why that doesn't work anymore. What are some of the common mistakes, maybe specifically around marketplace businesses?
Yeah, I think high level, the challenge today is that it's harder to get funding at the percentage you want, right? Like, you can go get funding today and last year and things like that, but you have to give up so much for it, right? Because 2 years ago, valuations were so high. It's like there were billion-dollar company. There were companies that were had an evaluation at like $1 billion, but only had like 10 million in revenue, right? It's like that gap, like to raise the next round after that is pretty tough, right? And so this idea of just, hey, we'll raise a round and we'll just put butts in seats and we'll race like hell to the next round of funding, which should be 9, 10, 12 months down the road, doesn't happen anymore. Like rounds now are 16 to 18 months apart, and that's a lifetime for a startup, right? Yeah. Most startups don't have 2 years of runway. Like, they're lucky if they have 1 year of runway if things don't go perfectly. And so I see the shift going to like, how do you run eventually a profitable business? Hopefully it is profitable, but how are you building enough efficiency into the process to where you're showing that you're on a path to profitability, right? There was this focus, I think, a while ago where like you had to be profitable to get really good terms on like the investments that you get or the funding that you get. And now it's like, okay, they might not be profitable because they're going to take some of that money, take a big bet to move the needle farther. That's where I think we're seeing the shift go to.
Yeah. And it's kind of always blown my mind how profitability wasn't more of a priority in the past.
Yeah. I was at Salesforce in the early days. I think I was like employee 3000, which seems big, but since they're like 50,000 today, that doesn't. And I remember like lavish Christmas parties and things like that. They were going to buy the space in Mission Bay to build their new office, and they were going to pay cash for it. And like, they weren't profitable. So it's like, why were we spending all this money? And it just didn't matter back then. Like, they just saw the, like, the upside of it. And that was enough for investors to be like, cool, we'll just keep pumping money into it. And I think that ran a long way, because there's a ton of VC money out there. And most VCs, you know, want to have, you know, they really only need one of 10, you know, companies to hit for them to see the profitability. And I think we're seeing that shift now to where we need to run smarter, more profitable businesses. I mean, I think I've heard EBITDA more in the last 6 months than I've ever heard the term used. I think, you know, accounting and people knew that on the back end, but like, it's coming up in revenue meetings, marketing people are talking about it. It's now a company thing, just like I think revenue has shifted to be a team sport. Like, getting to profitability and having good EBITDA so that your company looks good on paper is like cross-functional now, where I think it was just an accounting thing and just a finance thing previously.
And do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a great thing. I think we were running businesses just to make money and have a big revenue number and say I got to 10 million and how fast you got to 50 million or how fast you got to 100 million. But it's like, what if, like, if you got to 10 million, but it costs you 9 million to get there, that's really not that good of a business, right? I'd rather see a $5 million business that they spent $1 million to get there, right? Yeah. That's a much better gap. And it also protects you from the downturns. And I think we saw that a lot. Not in COVID for sure, but I think 2023 really hurt a lot of businesses because they couldn't go and get the money. And they were just focused on like, well, if we just get more revenue, we get more revenue. They didn't think about how do we be more efficient on that, right? Do we lean into content more? Do we lean into networks more? Do we lean into like meeting people at events, which, you know, can have a bigger ROI? That's the focus now. And I just think it's a really interesting space because the companies that are doing really, really well and a lot of like the small startups that are coming up now are basically making a name for themselves on LinkedIn, socially, through their networks before they're like essentially launching themselves. So they already have this like group of fans that are ready to support them at all cost.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's even like been, you know, I mean, this is not a new concept, but more of companies being like really transparent and, you know, building in public, you know, which even accelerates that sort of, you know, raving fans even more.
Yeah. I think people want to be a part of it. Right. And I like the idea of building in public. Right. I think the old school way to look at it is like, if we have good SEO and we just throw a bunch of money to be at the top of search bars, that we're going to get it. But I don't think I think the buyer journey has changed, right? We know it for sure that like buyers are coming in a lot more educated than they ever were. So like, you're not really starting at the top of the funnel, right? I always like Winning by Design's bow tie funnel because like they're already like pretty deep into what their knowledge is about it. And you're either like confirming their knowledge or like kind of helping the customer understand their knowledge was wrong or what they read was incorrect so that you can help kind of paint the picture of how they need to solve their problems. Where like before, 5 or 10 years ago, sales was about like, I have no idea what you do in this space, start educating me. And it's like, if you were the first one there to kind of educate them on the space, like you had a customer for life because they didn't want to go and find data elsewhere.
Yeah. And where do you think marketplaces fit in sort of this transition of, you know, buyers that are much more educated and, you know, typically wait until they're very far down the process before they actually want to talk to a salesperson?
Yeah, I think it's the marriage between like, we want to move away from agencies because we don't want to pay 30, 40% for a hire. But also like, we know we can't just hire a recruiter and do it on our own, right? The hardest part of just like, I think if companies didn't have to go outside to hire, they would, right? If they didn't need to use agencies, if they didn't need to use marketplaces, if they didn't need to use job boards, they would. The reality is that's not possible. Right. It's if it was, there wouldn't be hundreds of agencies. There wouldn't be billion-dollar companies that are agencies and things like that. And so I see marketplaces as like plugging the hole in between where like you can empower your team, whether you have a recruiter or not. So like, you know, in a tech platform like Gun.io, you can have, you don't necessarily need a recruiter. You could have your hiring manager who needs to hire for their team who really understands the spec of the person that they need, because it's not just as simple as, oh, I need a front end person or a full stack person. Like, what do you really need them to be able to do? they can use their knowledge. We can make it really efficient for them to find that candidate, and they can move the process along faster. Because I think one of the things I've seen kind of in the last 10 years with marketplaces is, especially with technical talent, there's a big gap between like what recruiters know and what the hiring manager wants. And it's, you know, it's not that they're not communicating well, they're just communicating differently. And typically it doesn't match, right? The recruiter will try to find based on just simple skills. Like, do they know a language? Do they know how to code this? Have they used JavaScript before? Something like that. Versus the hiring manager wants to know like what projects they use that language on, because that shows that they're either capable of doing it or not. And so I see marketplaces as just being a much better way to understand who's actively looking, what are they really bringing to the table, and is it a match, right? And match being what they've done previously, our salaries or hourly rates, you know, within what we want to spend on this. You really don't have that kind of transparency when you just post a job or go to a recruiter and things like that.
Yeah. And where else do you see, you know, marketplaces being a good fit outside of hiring talent?
I think a big part of the marketplaces, and one of the things we did at Hired, I think pretty well, was educating the world on what's happening in that space, right? What does it cost to have engineers onshore versus offshore? There's this new term out there called nearshore, where they're offshore, but they're in the right time zones, right? So they could be in Brazil and still line up with like East Coast time zones or things like that. I think it's a way to educate people on where the market's going, because I still think we're just trying to figure out this remote first world. There's a lot of companies that are trying to bring people back in office, you know, 2 days a week, 3 days a week. And that's great for some people. And I definitely think like younger people should go in, kind of understand the culture and then have the flexibility. But what's made it challenging is, you know, there are a lot of people moving to cheaper areas, things like that. And so how do you help kind of have the cost conversation of, you know, tier one cities in the US were basically San Francisco and New York, right? So if I move to Iowa, why should I be paid the same as somebody that has a cost of living in New York? And when COVID first happened and everybody said, oh, we're going to go remote, we're not going to change your salary. Well, now they're realizing that like that doesn't scale for them and it doesn't make it efficient. So I see marketplaces being able to really help kind of educate of what's the reality of the talent that's available. Where are they located? What do you really have to pay for them? Because I think one of the biggest things, and I think a lot of the surprises for organizations today, is offshore talent has gotten more expensive. It's catching up to the US. It's still behind, right? Because just cost of living is very different. But that's a big kind of like stake in the ground for organizations, because 8-10 years ago, you know, you used to be able to hire a ton of engineers in India for a fraction of the price that you hire, you know, people based in the US. And so now it's more of, do you want people in time zones that can work on projects similarly, or do you want to find kind of the least expensive talent and you don't really care where they are? So that's where I see marketplaces fitting in.
Yeah. Yeah. And just kind of curious to see some more of your thoughts around, okay, if there's a kind of shift in a focus, where revenue at all costs can't be the playbook, what are some of the things that, you know, some of these younger companies need to be focusing on?
Yeah, I think brand's important. At least people know who you are, right? Yeah. And the reason for that is, and I've seen companies like Apollo and Warmly do that pretty well. To like, I think we talked about it, like building in public. I think Warmly's doing a great job building in public, if you want to say it that way. And I think what that allows is for people to understand what you do, because sales is all timing, right? And people buying your products is all timing. If they don't need your product right now, it doesn't matter if you're the leader in your group or you have the best product. So building in public and having a brand of like what you guys do and what you offer allows that when people are ready to make an evaluation, you make the list, right? Hopefully you're the first person they reach out to and things like that. I think the also thing it allows you to do is when you have the notoriety and people are talking about you, you don't necessarily need such a huge development team where you're just like making thousands of calls a day, sending thousands of emails a day to try to get people to have a meeting with you. You know, it's not this 1% conversion rate now where if I send 1,000 emails, I'll get enough people to fill the funnel. It's now focused on like, how do we have smarter teams, more full cycle type reps that can basically deal with these warm leads right? People that already know about your brand, people that already know about your product, you've been able to figure out intent or something like that, that they would be a good fit for you based on how you built your ICPs and potentially you have intent data, that you're reaching out at the right time. And I think that's where we're going to start to see it. And I think we had to build such big teams before because we just assumed the more people we talk to, the more deals we're going to get. And I think today buyers are way more sophisticated and you really need to tell them and guide them on like why this product is going to solve the problems you have. And I think that's first by educating them that you actually know how to solve their problems, right? Whether it's customer stories or things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, such a good point. I think brand is, you know, obviously there's a lot of people that have caught on to this, but it's still one of the most like underrated, you know, high value activities for, especially for younger startups. You know, I've built a business without a brand and I've built a business with a brand. And I can tell you with a brand, it is so much easier. Like the, it can cut the timeline in half of what it takes you to get to 1, 5, or even 10, mm-hmm. Just by leveraging brand. And especially if you get, you know, maybe not just the founder or founders, if you get your entire team to participate, it can be very effective.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And it's, it does cut the time in half, right? If you go to events or things like that and they're like, oh, what does your organization do? I've never heard of you. It's like, okay, we're really starting from zero. Right. But if it's like, oh, you're with like all these other companies and this is what you guys do at a high level, it's like, cool, you're already like partly educated on it. Now let's just talk about differentiators and like why we're different and why we may be a fit for you or not. Right. I think that's the real value that having the brand and the marketing and really the like sense of people understanding what you do before you get to them is just paramount today.
Yeah. Jeff, it's been awesome having you on. Any final thoughts and where's the best place for people to get into your world?
Yeah. Best place is LinkedIn. I don't try to multi-channel it too much on there. I think it's just a great platform for people to get together. I always love reaching out to people and chatting with people. So hit me up just on my LinkedIn there. Send me a message. Happy to connect with anybody. And then I'm always willing to jump on the phone with people and chat about career moves, motion upward and things like that. So just look me up on LinkedIn.
Awesome. We'll drop the link there in the show notes to make it easy for you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please write us a review, share the show with your friends. Helps us reach more sellers and sales leaders to transform the